We are back on the Andy Finn Show. I'm here with John Clark, telecom professor at the University of Kentucky. Hello, John.
Hello, Andy.
And I want to talk a little bit about eBay. So I've been buying a lot of things on eBay in recent months, as you know, and I've learned a lot of things about how eBay works. Without getting into the esoterica about that, I am putting together a list of hints for things about eBay that I've learned that I don't find in the documentation, or that people, natural questions that come up that aren't in their FAQs. Mm-hmm. But you were telling me a story about how these people were charged and convicted recently of bidding up friends and relatives' items for sale so that the people that eventually purchase it have to pay more.
Right.
Talk to me a little bit about that, because this seems like a flaw in the eBay business plan.
Well, it's a flaw. It's not so much a flaw in the eBay business plan as it is just the fact of human nature. There are con artists all around, and they run various scams and all that kind of thing. In terms of live auctions, for that matter, this has been a problem in various venues ever since the concept of auctions first came about.
Well, that's so true. I paid too much for that Fabergé egg a few years ago.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, in an auction situation, you never can tell who might be a co-conspirator in the bidding process, and so it's hit eBay now. And so the idea is that a person who has something to sell enlists the help of friends or family, and those folks keep bidding up the item until the competitive spirit takes hold. And folks decide they just have to have it, and they wind up paying more for it than it's actually worth. Now, the element of fraud that enters into it is that the friends or the co-conspirators really don't pay for the item and buy it if it turns out that they have the highest bid.
Yeah, if they bid it up too much, they just cancel it, and then the seller lists it again, I assume.
The sale doesn't take place. But if they're lucky, then they get to the point where they've bid it up enough and they think they're going to make enough money off of it, and the unsuspecting dupe goes ahead and pays too much for it. So I just read this article just a few days ago where several people had been caught and were ordered to make restitution of about $90,000, which is a pittance, you know, in terms of the overall business that eBay does. But it's just an indication of the magnitude of the problem we're just starting to recognize at this point. There's no telling how much that really goes on. As a matter of fact, I would guess that it's probably pretty prevalent, and they're just starting to catch on to it. But, of course, the only way that they can act on it is if somebody decides that they've been defrauded and they report it.
No, I'll tell you how they can act on it.
How's that?
They could track. They could have a big cross sectional database that takes all the bidders and all the sellers, and it looks for matches. And if you bid on one person's auction one day, that's fine. It tracks it. You get one hit. But if you bid again on such person's stuff the next day, and again the next day, and again the next day, and they find a pattern, they could raise some red flags and say, okay, here's somebody, 10 products in a row, they're bidding on it from the same seller.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll bet they could actually track some of this and get some indications. Now, they have millions, probably, users, and so millions of IDs, and it wouldn't be foolproof. You would still have to do some follow-up work, but they might be able to catch the most egregious examples.
Yeah, the interesting thing about it is I brought this up in class the other day, and it was funny. It kind of surprised me that quite a few people in this class of about 55 students thought that there wasn't anything wrong with that, that it just made good sense. If you want to make money, you know, maximize your profits, then you do whatever it takes to do it. And I was a little taken aback by it, quite frankly.
Well, because they're forgetting the fundamental principle of an auction, which is that you're willing to let the market set the price, right? And
right.
I'm looking for a particular kind of telephone receiving device, the Gintner, for my home studio here, and I've seen three of them for sale since March. I missed the first one. It went for $320. The second one went for $1,300-something dollars, and the third one went for $765. So they're all over the map, and if you're in competition with somebody that really wants it, it really bids it up, and if you're not, you get some bargains.
Right.
And that's the way auctions are supposed to work. You aren't guaranteed anything. I'll tell you what comes across the most consistent. I have bought memory. I have bought common items like a monitor. You know, if you type in the standard Dell monitor, right, the E173 is the new model FP. There's hundreds of them for sale, brand new. I don't know where these people are getting their hands on these, so much cheaper than Dell sells them. But there's several an hour that come up, you know, that end the auction, and you follow the prices, and they're quite consistent. You know, in any given week, they're all in the same price range. And so there is stability in those kinds of markets because there's so many items. But when you got a specialty item that only comes up once in a while, the prices are all over the place.
I really don't know how to explain that. Fraud might be a part of it, but what I believe is probably more likely is the uninformed bidder. And that could change over time as the nation becomes, you know, a nation of more informed bidders as eBay becomes bigger and bigger and bigger, and we adopt our buying practices become more online than brick and mortar.
Well, I guess I'm saying that most of the bidders that I observe actually are pretty smart, meaning overall they seem to all find the same, their tolerance for a maximum price on something like this flat screen monitor is about the same each time, and it's that part is interesting. Now, I think what happens is when you've got more of a specialty item and you have two people that really want it, two or more people, it clearly gets bid up, or somebody wants it right away, right?
Right.
They're like, I'm hunting now. I don't want to wait till 3 days from now when there's another monitor available, and so they bid now and they pay more than they would have had to, but you know they make that choice.
Mm-hmm.
But
and I guess as long as they're paying less than they would to go out and buy a new one, they're happy with it.
Well, that's certainly true. I usually do several things. When I want to buy something, I will check on eBay for it. I'll also go, if it's a book or a CD, I'll go to Amazon and at least one other book or CD place, and I will look for it used, because the best used prices on Amazon for used books are about what you'd pay on eBay. And actually, with if you're looking for an auction or on eBay, you're looking for these things, for something like books or CDs, you're just as well off to go to their sister site, half.com.
Right.
That's where most of the books are. Mm-hmm. But the point is that I will look around several places, and if it's computer stuff, I'll look on eBay. I'll do a Google search, but I'll also go to places like pricewatch.com, and I get an idea what the cheapest one is. Then I know whether or not I'm getting a bargain on eBay or not.
Well, you're a very informed buyer. You know, and you're technologically savvy, and in terms of percentages, you probably belong to a relatively small percentage of buyers, even though that turns out to be a large number of people.
Oh, it's true. I'm off the charts. I'm so smart at this stuff.
Oh, in more ways than one. But all I'm saying is that, in general, you're much more informed than the average eBay user, or for that matter, buyer of online commodities.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but I will say this about this this internet thing. I think it's here to stay because of it gives.
Oh,
you
really? Can I quote you on that?
It gets you so many interesting advantages. I don't buy hardly anything retail anymore. I don't go into CompUSA. I don't go into Micro PC Warehouse, the computer stores around here, Best Buy, and buy stuff. If it's electronics or computers, I can always find it cheaper online. I was just looking for, I just bought a bigger UPS, uninterruptible power supply, as well as a couple of new surge protectors, basically, extensions that have 12 plugs in them. I was using three or four a little of the six plug things, the old ones, mm-hmm. and so I was looking for those. You can't come anywhere near the price in the computer stores and the Best Buys of the world as you can on the net for the same stuff.
Well, there's no doubt about it, and I, of course, as you know, am interested in musical equipment and instruments and that kind of thing. I haven't bought anything from a retail store in terms of microphones, cables, guitars, amplifiers, you know, any kind of sound reinforcement. You know, I just simply do not go into stores and buy that stuff anymore.
Well, it seems to me there's at least two reasons why it's cheaper online. The first is that a practical, if you're comparing business A to business B, the businesses that are retail in your neighborhood have the costs of brick-and-mortar locations. Mm-hmm. So their costs are higher, and so their prices are going to be higher
right.
than somebody that's just got a warehouse and is shipping stuff out. The other thing, though, is that you can do searches on the internet, and you can find the best price. You go out to pricewatch.com looking for any kind of a computer equipment, and it brings up the cheapest first if you set it up to do it that way, and where you can get it. And so you can look for the same the model number you want, and it'll tell you the absolute rock bottom prices where you can find that in the whole country.
Right.
And so that's huge, because if you think about the way, you know, you and I spent most of our adult life, if you want to go out and buy a new, you know, a new lawnmower in the spring, and you say, well, I want to get a good deal, you know, I think I'd like a, you know, and you have one or two brands you're willing, you want a Toro, right? So there's many places that are selling Toros. But who wants to drive to Walmart and check those prices, and then drive to a lawn and garden store and check those prices, and then drive to Home Depot and check their prices? By the time you do, the $20 you might have saved by shopping around, you've wasted it in your time and then some.
Right.
And so we tend to, you know, if we know we're going to look, we look casually, or you duck in a store when you're in the area. But in general, a lot of people buy it at the first place if it looks like it's a reasonable price or it looks like it's on sale.
Yeah, and the kind of thing that I was talking about too, you know, at least the places that you mentioned, like Walmart or let's say Home Depot or Lowe's, they are national chains with a lot of buying power in terms of the quantity of things that they buy and the price breaks they get. Other things like other items like the ones I was just mentioning, musical equipment, there are no nationwide chains of music equipment stores.
Well, plus they're just more special items, and so less likely to be on sale.
They tend to be locally owned. All of them tend to be locally owned, with the exception of the ones that are the big online stores, like Musician's Friend or something like that. They have buying power that far outstrips any local equipment store. And not only that, there's a difference in the number and variety of items that they're able to carry. You know, and so if you want to see everything that's possible, then you go online and look for it.
No, that's true. Yeah, so I've been very happy with buying my stuff online. I feel like I always get a better price, regardless of whether it's through an auction site like eBay, or it's a used book from Amazon, or it's something I do in one of these databases that gets you the lowest price for those goods, whether they're computer goods or home furnishings or whatever.
And it's pretty amazing that places like Amazon.com and eBay have managed to achieve a level of security that is generally safe, you know, because as you and I both know, there's always the possibility that your credit card number could be intercepted and stolen and used for nefarious purposes.
Not mine. I've been using yours on these sites.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
No, that's true. And we've talked about that kind of fraud before and identity theft before. Really, that's what the phishing is about, ultimately, is identity theft.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, what is it? Is it Citibank has that great series of ads that have won Emmy Awards where they have the voices of the identity thieves
right.
come out of the mouths of the victims and talk about all the silly things that the person bought in a strange voice. And those ads are funny and have caught most people's attention.
True. And one of the things that I want to point out, too, that we're probably not generally aware of is the fact that this is not most of this kind of credit card theft, identity theft, and all that kind of thing is not just a matter of individuals who are hackers who want to capitalize on this on an individual basis. But we're talking about organized crime here on a large scale.
That's right.
You know, and I got to tell you, the Russians are behind a lot of it.
Yeah, no, that's well. It's now that Putin has the power he needs, I'm sure he'll be able to crack down.
Yeah, right. Now, some things can't be solved with an AK-47.
Well, that's a whole nother kettle of fish. So let's wrap up this section, and thank you, John. And we'll be back to talk some more.